Title of this morning's message is Recess. Where do you go to work? Where do you go to stop? Where do you go to retreat? There was a time in my life when I was a master fort builder. You know, our house was crowded. We lived in an apartment. There were six of us when we were all there at the same time. And my parents, my two brothers. I never had my own room except for a brief time in middle school. And even then, that room was the family television room. So the whole family would come in my room to watch TV. If you wanted privacy in our home, some space of your own, place to get away from it all, you had to be creative. Usually you had to go outside. In our home, the way that I did that was to make forts. And the ones that were outside were usually these rickety temporary structures that were stuck off in the woods somewhere. Sometimes we would use big cardboard boxes from old or from appliances that had recently been delivered. Refrigerator boxes make great forts, as do washer and dryer boxes. Those never lasted, though, because it usually rained at some point, of course, and the fort would just melt. Or the wind would blow and it would fall down. But there was one kind of fort that I was especially gifted at building. And that was the fort that was in my house. I shared a room with my younger brother, Raji, for most of my life. And we had a bunk bed in our room. And sometimes it was separated, but most of the time it was bunked. And we would often switch the top and the bottom. We'd have to share because, of course, sleeping on the top is the desirable position in a bunk bed. But no matter who was in the top or the bottom bunk, one thing that we did agree on was that the bottom bunk was better for building forts. The bunk bed was stuck over in the corner, and so what we'd do is we'd take our thickest blankets and we would fix one of them to the side of the bunk bed, the long side, and we'd tuck it in real tight at the top, and then we'd tuck it in under the mattress on the bottom, and then we'd get another thick blanket and we would stick it on the side of the bed where the ladder was, and we'd kind of tuck it as tight as we possibly could. We didn't want any light to get in there. We wanted it to be a very secure fort. And then we would get a flashlight, and we'd get inside, and after all the preparations were made, we'd go into our fort. Inside the fort, it was dark. We would bring our flashlights with us just to see each other. We didn't tell ghost stories. We just used it to kind of shine around and see what was going on. One person was appointed as the king or the captain or the mayor. That fort would serve a lot of different purposes. Sometimes it was a ship. Sometimes the fort was a castle. Sometimes the fort was an entire city and it needed a mayor. But no matter what we called the fort, it really served a single purpose. It was a retreat, a way to escape from the home just for a little while. A place to call your own. A place to be out of this world. You know, these days I see my kids doing the exact same thing. They actually sleep in the same bunk bed that we slept in when we were younger. We've got them new mattresses. They are a little bit nicer than the ones we had. My parents are here today, and I just want to point out that those mattresses that we had were, you know, they were struggling. I did not have to teach my children how to build forts or why forts were necessary. And no, their lives, as I examine them, are not that difficult. You think that they don't have much to retreat from. But nevertheless, they are building forts with blankets in the same bunk bed that I slept in when I was younger, without any instruction. It's almost as if they know they need a place and a time to get away. Oftentimes, if we as adults are curious about what our elemental nature is, or what's at our core, what we need to survive. Or, to put it a different way, how God made us to be. When we're curious about that which is fundamental to being human, the best place to go for an answer is not Wikipedia or Tony Robbins or maybe not even the preacher. When you want to know what you need, go and observe a child at play. They will show you where to locate joy, what exactly to cry about, and they'll show you why play is not the opposite of work. This might be why Jesus said, when you come to me as a child. And so we find ourselves in Deuteronomy chapter 5, and we're confronted with 10 commandments. They were all given to the Israelites after escaping from Egypt, and they served as a kind of rubric for measuring life. One of those commandments is to take a Sabbath. We're told to observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy, because the Lord our God has commanded us to do so. For 6 days, we're told, you can work, and in the 6 days, you do all of your work. But on the seventh day, or one out of every 7 days, you stop. You pause. You build a fort in the middle of your week. Or at the end of it, you do no work. Not just you, but your son, your daughter, your male slave, your female slave, your ox, your donkey, even the resident alien in your town. Everybody and everything that has breath stops working. And at the end of verse 14, we're told why. Everybody stops working so that they may rest. Of all the Ten Commandments, this one should not be a cause for controversy. It really shouldn't even deserve a sermon, you would think. It should be the easiest for us to follow, right? God is inviting you to rest, to stop, pause, build a fort at the end of your week, step away. But strangely, this commandment may be the one that gives us the most problems. It would be easy for us to dismiss the Sabbath as something that is old, something that's nostalgic, archaic, something that spoke to earlier days when life and work were simple. You could argue against the utility of the Sabbath today by pointing out that the agricultural and the industrial economies that demanded more physical labor are gone now. And now what took 10 of us wearing steel-toed shoes now takes one of us wearing some sterile gloves and shoe covers while operating a robot at a computer. I mean, who needs rest when you got a robot? Or you could argue that God would want us to take advantage of the efficiencies that we've gained through technological innovation. You could say we should actually do more. Work 7 days now, since none of the 7 days is physically depleting us. Work is so easy now that we should eliminate all the distractions that keep us from making new things that ultimately will make us more money. And if we're really good about it, we'll give some of that money away and make the world a little bit of a better place. And one of those distractions actually has been identified as eating. If we could just get rid of eating, we could do more work, advance further. Have you heard about Soylent? S-O-Y-L-E-N-T. I can't think of a worse name for a product. Soylent. It's invented by a guy named Rob Reinhart. He was a software engineer, and he spent many nights up working late, and he said that he came up with the idea for Soylent back in 2013 while he was working really long hours at a wireless communications company, and he realized that he was eating poorly because he wasn't getting up from his desk to cook a real meal. And he said that he wanted to create something that could be universally applicable for hardworking people like himself. he found eating to be a distraction. So he founded Soylent, based now in Los Angeles. And that year, in 2013, he started marketing and selling it to other people. It's this powder that you mix up with water. It's full of nutritious things. And ideally, if you drink it 3 times a day, you should get all the nutrients and energy that you need. And you just have to drink it. You don't have to sit down. You can just keep on working. Drink it sitting right at your desk while banging away at the computer. That year, he earned $3 million in funding from a crowdsourcing site. A lot of people were excited about the possibility of getting rid of the distraction of eating, apparently. Now, they've shipped the equivalent of 6 million meals across the country. Have you heard about the superfood that helps you defeat your own physiology? It's called bulletproof coffee. Jimmy Fallon is a fan. This is something that eliminates the annoying feeling of being tired, which I think is just part of being human, right? Well, now you've got something that can take care of that problem. Bulletproof coffee. Dave Asprey is his name. He was a technology entrepreneur and self-described biohacker. And his bulletproof coffee invention is a riff on this yak butter tea that he found to be very restorative while he was hiking in Tibet. You get these low mold coffee beans and you get 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter. A little bit better if it's from grass-fed cows. 1 to 2 tablespoons of medium chain triglyceride oil. I don't know what that is. And you get some type of easily digestible fat, or I think that's exactly what the MCT oil is. Now, the claim is that if you have 1 cup of this 450-plus calorie cup of coffee instead of breakfast, it will suppress your hunger throughout the day, it will promote weight loss, and it provides mental clarity. Makes it easier to work. He says that it is a gateway drug for taking control of your own biology. He's very well caffeinated. I've actually watched a video of him. And considering the strength of the addiction, there was a 3-day bulletproof conference in Pasadena, California in September of last year. 200 pounds of Kerrygold butter was not enough for the 500 attendees. There was also a run on unsalted grass-fed butter at the nearest Whole Foods. There's a lot of people that would love to get rid of the distraction of eating so that they can work. He says, "My energy levels are through the roof compared to what they used to be." What we forget is that the Sabbath was probably the one commandment that came out of God's own personal experience. You know, in the 2nd chapter of Genesis, after working for 6 whole days, even God had to say, "It's time for a break." So on the 7th day, God rested. The Sabbath isn't a quirk in the scriptural witness. It is everywhere. In all the antiquity, all the historical data that we can find about the Israelite people, it is in all the source material. The Sabbath was central to the life of God's chosen people. It's actually a derivative of the Hebrew word for desist or cease. If you don't like that word, you can also try recess. You remember recess from school? Time when you ceased sitting at your desk and working, and you'd go outside and you would play if you wanted, or you could just sit on the bench and rest. There are 2 definitions for the word recess. One is a break. in time. The other is a concave part of a larger construction. You know, I actually like the second definition better. The Sabbath as a recess. It's the carved out concavity to life. It's kind of like the forts we built to get away. It's not the opposite of work. It is the work of actually being fully alive. God is saying, without it, we will fail at all the other commandments. We will tire following Jesus if we don't stop to settle back into the fundamental state from which we were created. To be still is to rest and to be renewed so that you can get back to it. And so we're going to do something here at Downtown Church that I don't know if a church has ever done before. We are going to take a Sabbath. We're going to carve out 2 weeks, July 5th and July 12th. You probably should put that on your calendar, because if you come to church on July 5th or July 12th, nobody is going to be here. We are quite literally stopping church. Because in many ways, church itself, for some of us, is work. It takes a lot of work to put this experience together. Greg and Robert and Tim, they're at the office at 6:30. Picking up the trailer, setting up all this stuff, and setting up the nursery. You got a band that's rehearsing on Wednesdays and on Saturdays together and then by themselves at home. I think in the last 3 years, somebody counted, I've written 180 sermons, I believe. They're usually about 2,000 words a piece. These programs, they don't happen accidentally. This is not stock images that you get off of Microsoft Word. Somebody actually puts all this stuff together, the prayers that are written. But we're not stopping because it's work. We're stopping because it's what God has invited and asked us to do, to take a break. And so you might ask, well, what about me? Shouldn't we have church on the seventh day? Well, guess what? There are other churches in Columbia that you can go to. You do not have to go to Downtown Church. In fact, it'd be great if you went to other churches and you visited and then you came back and you told us about it. You found or saw something that we could be doing differently here. Maybe you could experience worship in a completely different way and encounter God in a surprising and new way. God could come at you sideways through maybe an organ. Or a preacher that's wearing a robe. A lot of churches wouldn't do this because they'd be afraid that people might not come back. If that's the case, so be it. If you found a place to call home, then we'll thank God for that. A lot of churches wouldn't do it because they would lose the money from the Sunday offering. But thankfully for us, we're able to do this because about 80%, 85% of our giving comes in online, not through the Sunday offering bowls. If God had to rest, then maybe this living organism, this thing that is not manufactured or made by a robot, but is made up of real people, and collectively is one body, it might need to rest as well. And so for 2 weeks, we're just going to stop. But there's another reason why we're doing it. Because if we don't do it, I don't know if you ever will. If you'll actually think about what it might take or how easy it might be for you to pause one out of every 7 days and rest and be renewed. And so in some ways, this is us giving you permission to take a recess, build a fort, step away, so that you can step back in, be fully present when you go back. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.